Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, February 1st, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in Pasadena. I've been here for the week with Jason Bawden-Smith, and I stayed up late to record, but there's still an occasional car going by, so forgive me if there's a little sound in the background. I want to again welcome new subscribers. In the annual wrap-up, we have a section called Salieri Core Concepts. It's up on the website presentation. You can also do a search on the website for Salieri Core Concepts. You'll pull it up. We also have it on the website. And it's a great way of getting introduced to some of the great concepts. So if you read a term like slow burn or red button, check out the Salieri Core Concepts. We have two more spots in the Australian Outback experience in May 2018. It's going to be a great trip. Jason, it's one of the reasons I came out here was to work with Jason on making some of our final plans. Our theme tonight is ZioCon Double Down, closed borders, open checkbooks, fees for our friends. Unfortunately, if you watch the State of the Union, you can see the neocons are back in full blossom. It's very dangerous and it's frightening. I keep watching central control and fascism get stronger and stronger, and I'm afraid it's going to keep getting stronger until we deal with it. The State of the Union was a culmination of several weeks of bad news on this front. The first was that there was a black budget provision in the stopgap funding. We just published our third in the series on U.S. statutes relating to federal financial management, and this one on the black budget. And let me just read a little bit of what we said. The excerpt is up on the website. Even in just the last few days, there have been concerns that the bill that ended the recent government shutdown included provisions allowing the executive branch to fund covert action without congressional oversight or going through the usual congressional oversight committees. The provision is currently a subject of debate with a potential amendment to remove the exception imposed by some in Congress. As it stands, this bill waives the later discussed, already very limited reporting and appropriation requirements of the National Security Act. It's not hard to see why it has raised more than a few eyebrows. Steps to change the language of the waiver reportedly blocked in Congress. With such a recent move towards limiting Congress's and the people's oversight in a situation already sparse on oversights, appropriation compliance, and reporting compliance, the time has never been better to ask, what is the black budget? How did it come to be? How does it work? And perhaps most importantly, how and why is it considered legal and constitutional? Anyway, so we have the administration asking for and Congress giving the right that appropriations for the black budget don't even have to be viewed and understood by the House and Senate Select Intelligence Committee, and that is absolutely frightening. The purpose that we envision for this series, and it's been a series of three special Salieri reports on the legal and financial, is not because I think most subscribers are going to be interested. These are really pieces that are to make it much easier for serious researchers, reporters, and lawyers to really understand the missing money issues. If we're going to come up with real ways of enforcing, we need to understand the law. Anyway, so those of you who are interested in that aspect of the missing money, I think you'll find it interesting, but please don't. Understand that this was really designed to help the reporting and researching community really get to the bottom of what's going on. My concern is that this push for these provisions is really to cover the tracks on the administration's failure to report to the House and Senate Select Committee both money and operations. And in fact, I think they're a lot more worried about keeping the operations secret and covering their tracks on not reporting those operations to the House and Senate than they are about the money. But in some sense, the operations, you know, they're integral to each other. If you report the money, people are going to say, what in the world are you spending all this money for? I also think this is a way of postponing, delaying, and that gives them time to recook the books. Clearly, I think if sort of what you're seeing in the feedback from the Department of Defense, it smacks to me that they're They need more time to cook the books, and that's exactly what they're doing. Now, in addition to the black budget stopgap funding change, which is temporary, we'll see what comes out the other side when they extend the stopgap funding. We see approval by the Congress with the request of the administration for NSA warrantless surveillance. We're seeing an enormous big deal made about the FISA memo and what the Obama administration was asking the court to do, whether it was telling the court the truth. We saw Bill Binney's excellent interview on what has come out from the FISA court. And then the question is, what is in the memo that we want to, that House Intelligence has voted to leak, that basically describes some of the outrages that are going on. But at the same time, let's be clear, the Congress just approved NSA warrantless surveillance, which would allow the NSA to do what we're all objecting to them doing in 2016, but now it would be legal. So it's, you know, that the NSA warrantless surveillance combined with what was in the stopgap funding for the black budget, you're basically talking about the black budget going and the national security state going completely out of control, both in terms of surveillance and financing, completely out of control. I mean, this is a real constitutional issue. Now, FISA memo, will it be published? The president has now ordered that it will be published tomorrow. We see Mueller ask for a delay in Flynn's sentencing. That's a very good sign, because as far as I'm concerned, the FBI behavior and conduct in his case is way outside the law and over the top. And it wouldn't surprise me if Mueller knows that now the case has no credibility, but we have to see the memo. It's wrong of me to speculate. Let's see what it really says. The State of the Union was a very interesting exercise. I got a chance to watch most of it. We turned it on a little bit late in the middle of dinner. I think the most important thing I saw during the State of the Union was the behavior of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, if you look at the protocol, the Joint Chiefs are not supposed to stand up, clap, make any faces. What they're supposed to do is watch the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, in this case, General Dumford, and just remain passive. And if he stands and claps, then they stand and clap, etc. But I have to say that their poker faces weren't very good, and there were several points at which they looked deeply frightened. And it's interesting because I think the Trump made an announcement that we're going ahead with the funding $1.5 trillion for the nuclear arsenal, of course, subject to congressional approval. I believe it was this issue that got Bannon kicked out of the White House and then destroyed. Now, he let himself get caught offside, so he was sloppy. But I think that there was real concern that Bannon was going to stop this $1.5 expenditure. I'm suspicious that it's not going to be just on the nuclear arsenal. I think we have nuclear bombs are a legacy technology, so it wouldn't surprise me if this $1.5 trillion is for something far more than nuclear. But it's a extraordinary, it's an extraordinary commitment to either have a war or pretend to have a war, including a nuclear war. And if you look at the Joint Chiefs' body language and face when Trump announced it, it sort of speaks many, many words. I also think, just from watching them, and I'm guessing, that the last thing, I just think they think we're talking too tough and picking fights where we don't need to. And it looks to me like they don't trust Trump. They just think he's too temperamental, is my guess. Whatever it is, it's not a good sign. And I would, if you're interested, I would encourage you to go back and see what you think of their body language. I'm open to input on this topic, but for somebody who was really engineered into the White House with the support of the military, it did not look warm and fuzzy. One of the quotes that I keep using, I used it in the annual wrap-up from Bannon, and I think it expresses, you know, what caused him to really get worked over. He, President Trump, criticizes the Russians all the time. He knows the Russians are not good guys. We should be focused on how we bring the Cold War to an end so that we don't have to. And I think it was President Obama's program, $1 trillion to upgrade the nuclear arsenal. Is that what you want to do? Is that where you want to spend your money? Would you rather spend $1 trillion in Cleveland, in Baltimore, in the inner cities of this country where we need to spend it in the heartland of this nation? And I think what he's trying to say is, in a world of anarchy, do you need another enemy? So Steve Bannon on why spending $1.5 trillion on the nuclear arsenal is not such a great idea. So the other thing I suspect the chief of staffs know, if you look at what has happened in both Northern and Southern California, I think it's the equivalent of a Phoenix program. We're basically moving population off the land so that the money coming back in and big investment can move in. It's kind of making America safe for Israel and the billionaires and big corporations. And whether the military is doing it or standing down, I think, you know, just again, reading the body language, there's no way that there are two choices. The military is involved, whether it's because they're doing it or they're standing down. There's no way anything like that happens in U.S. airspace without their without their doing one or the other. So now there's another question I have, which is, if you look at all the war talk, how much of this is a bluff for that provides air cover while we return as much capacity back into the United States, as well as return military? The military is very badly overextended. Special forces are badly overextended. So is this a bluff to preserve the reserve currency, talking tough while it covers our retreat? That's one possibility. Anyway, I think my big question is, Mattis is a pretty smart guy. How come he didn't stop this? There's a reason. So lots of unanswered questions around this 1.5 for the nuclear arsenal, but it's a serious matter. The other thing you see is, if you look at the cabinet sitting in the front row, you had the most powerful cabinet positions all sitting in the front row together, Tillerson, Mnuchin, Mattis. And there's no doubt to me from watching the body language that the most powerful guy in that room was not the president, it was Mattis. He seems to be the most trusted person in the cabinet by the other cabinet members. Anyway, so the military has been Trump's base, and the question is, why are they looking so scared? Is it because they're headed in the wrong direction? Well, that brings me to the fact that the following day we had dozens, up to 70 congressmen, going to a retreat at Greenbrier in an Amtrak train. It was hit by a garbage truck, even though, given the roads were closed and you had a helicopter escort, that was impossible. If the train had derailed going 70 miles per hour, which it didn't, luckily it just came to a stop on the tracks. But if it had derailed at 70 miles per hour, many people would have died. You had not only scores of congressmen, so up to 70, I think, is the numbers I've seen, but some of them had their family along. And so you're talking about 100 plus dead or seriously injured people. It's highly unlikely to me that this was an accident. Can you get someone who's mind controlled to drive a truck into a train going 70 miles per hour? Certainly you can. The driver was killed, and I think the second person in the truck was seriously injured. I mean, in theory, could it have been an accident? I think the chances are very small. But you look how dangerous it is now to be in the U.S. Congress. We have Steve Scalise almost murdered at the baseball game. If the security guard hadn't shot the gunman, many other people could have been killed. We've had Rand Paul attacked by his neighbor and with six broken ribs, and on and on. So, and now, literally, if the train had derailed, we could have scores and scores of dead Republican. Now, why did this happen? What is the pressure for? It wouldn't surprise me if part of this is to make sure you get a permanent authorization on not having to report the black budget extended for the stopgap funding. But there are other things going on there. Of course, there's the release of the memo. Apparently, a lot of the people in there were people who had had voted for the release of the memo. The FBI and DOJ, numerous people in the FBI and DOJ could go to jail for what could come out on all of this. Then there's another push for the National ID database. Another question I have is, I think the operation in Las Vegas was very much an FBI operation, and we've seen 12 school shootings in the last 30 days as well. So the FBI operation is on the line, and who knows what might come out. We'll just have to see. As I said, I shouldn't be speculating. If you're interested, William Binney did a great interview on one of the FISA court's decisions related to this. So that is very interesting background for whatever comes out. But hopefully tomorrow we'll get to see the memo. Now, second thing I wanted to ask, and this dovetails with the State of the Union address, what in the world is up at HHS? First, we get rid of Tom Price on a travel issue pretext. As far as I'm concerned, that's a pretext. Somebody's engineering him out. Then we swear in the former lobbyist for Lilly, who has lots of experience in managing HHS. That happens right after we come up with an exemption office, which gives everybody hope. It's the Office of Conscious and Religious Exemption. So hopefully that protects doctors who don't want to have to give vaccines and issues like that. But we swear in a Lilly lobbyist. The next first act of the former Lilly lobbyist is to fire the head of the CDC. In the meantime, we have Jeff Bezos, JP Morgan, and Warren Buffett announce a new healthcare policy and venture for their employees. They're going to use all their skills, knowledge, technology to radically re-engineer how their employees get healthcare. And they think they can bring the cost down dramatically. It's funny. It's finally the big corporations who decided they're sick of the intermediation by big corporations and financial institutions. So the Midianite thing is happening. You can count on it. But Trump announces in the State of the Union that he's going to bring about radically lower drug prices. Well, don't think those two announcements are separate. Those guys have been talking, and that's a plan. Now, the reality, this plan, if you have the White House and a couple of the big billionaires, is basically the billionaire club deciding they're going to squeeze everybody else. This has the potential to be wildly disruptive, and make no mistake about it, whether it's employment, construction, facilities, real estate, pharmacies, including those pharmacies in Walmart and the grocery stores. The wild pumped up costs of healthcare has pumped up many aspects of the economy. So again, we're watching something very similar to the ring the bell on the Amazon deal. This can be wildly disruptive to the entire healthcare sector. Now, it's got to come, and ultimately, depending on how it spreads, It could be good, but Jason joins me later this evening to talk a little bit about what he's been studying in terms of technology. So it's simply a matter of time. So my attitude is bring it on. It could be good for everybody, but keep an eye on it because you're going to start seeing explosive changes in how healthcare is delivered. So let's look at some of the other comments in the State of the Union address. There was $1.5 trillion announced for infrastructure. We've seen leaks of the possible design of this. It's leveraged with state and local and private money. My guess is their goal is to support the money in operations they're bringing back in. So after you firebomb Santa Rosa, then you bring in taxpayers' money to rebuild it so that it serves the corporations and it helps you create Silicon Valley North. The question is, will it have a negative or positive return on investment to taxpayers? I'm a skeptic. Watch out for fees for your friends. And this is, of course, why we don't want Congress scared that they're going to have their train derailed every time they turn around, or their neighbor jump them in their lawnmower, or somebody, shoot them and kill them at the congressional baseball game. There's no doubt the speech was politically successful for Trump and the Republicans. The most successful line was, Americans are dreamers too. And it was well deserved because Americans have been drained and drained and drained and given a vision of themselves which is dumbed down and stupid, and it's extremely painful. So I thought that was a very politically very effective line. It's clear from the speech that they're focused on getting the Mexican cartels out of the narcotics trafficking in this country. You know, we saw for many years, and I think this was a Bush-Clinton partnership, the Mexican cartels sort of build out the drug networks with the help of, I believe, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the full weight of law enforcement. And that's part of what the Fast and Furious scandal was about. And there's no doubt that there is a tremendous effort underway to reverse engineer that. And frankly, it potentially can do a lot to make the United States a much safer place. Now, I don't think they're shutting down the drug markets. I think they're turning it back to the more traditional players. The Democrats had their State of the Union response by young Joe Kennedy, and it was a poor response because the Kennedy was also afraid to touch the real rail, or what I call the third rail. There was no facing the music on many of the serious issues. It was still dancing around in the official reality. Even worse, and I couldn't even finish it, was the libertarian Adam Kokesh, who clearly is, I assume he's working for the CIA, but he's a economic hitman and not a good one. And so he gave the line for the Libertarian Party, and the two of them were remarkably weak. There's no ability to kind of face or deal with a real deal. And then you had, I watched some of the commentary, they're still pushing an unbelievably tired, stupid Russian narrative, given where we are on the disclosures, on the Fusion GPS activities, as well as the FISA court, what's happened in the FISA court. It's just, you know, you just can't believe they're still pushing it. And then, of course, Bernie Sanders comes out and pushes the same thing. But it looks like he's doing everything he can to argue for nuclear war. So whether it's Trump trying to argue for $1.5 trillion for the nuclear arsenal, or Bernie Sanders saying, the Russians are coming, and NBC, some of the world's worst commentators like Andrea Mitchell, again, pointing fingers at the Russians. It's almost as though the Ziocons are so dead set on having a nuclear war with Russia. It makes me very glad that we're going to talk with Saker next week, because I think it's really time for a discussion with Saker about this effort to, you know, from both Democratic and Republican side, to push for war. The latest Economist cover has a picture of sort of a Lockheed Bluebird with a big title, "Are You Ready for the Next War?" It just makes you want to tear your hair out. So the push for nuclear war with Russia is very serious. You know, the question is, do they want war? Do they just want the financial equivalent of war without the war? I don't know. You know, I wish we had other political parties which were really willing to stand up and talk about the real deal, whether it was why we don't need a nuclear war with Russia and why we don't need to, you know, firebomb American neighborhoods and murder American people, whether it's with narcotics trafficking in the poor neighborhoods or now thermal warfare in the rich neighborhoods where we want to make way for Silicon Valley North. The reality is you see a lot of excitement around the country, small business and big business, for what the tax reform is making possible. And there's no doubt that economic activity could jump tremendously. We even see one economist at the Atlanta Fed come out and say, no, it's not going to be 2% GNP, it's going to be 5% GNP, which would be quite amazing. The reality is that some Americans are going to pay a very high price for the rush of this investment and economic activity, which many of the people in Santa Rosa can tell you about. So I don't want you to be fooled by the social packaging of Betsy DeVos saying, you know, we're getting rid of Common Core, though I'm deeply happy about it, or having an office of conscience and religious exemption at HHS. The deeper news is everything that's happening on the black budget money, the black budget powers, All of the deep stuff, NSA surveillance, is going in the wrong direction. We're not cleaning the swamp. We're building out an ever more powerful national security state. And yes, a lot of people on the payola train are getting cut. But that's, as I said, because we're going to the next phase. So there's a reason the Joint Chiefs are afraid, and I want to know what it is. So anything you can do to help me figure it out, I would deeply appreciate. I would note Tom Shannon, the top career civil servant at the State Department, resigned the day after the speech. So Trump announces $1.5 trillion into the nuclear arsenal and, you know, talks like he's ready to go to war, and then we have the senior State Department official with deep knowledge of dealing with Iran and Russia on nuclear issues resign at the age of 60. Not good. So expect the 2018 election to be more than interesting. Money and markets. U.S. dollar now down to 88.9995. We're going to break the 92 line if we haven't broken it already. And as I've said before, it's a straight shot down to 80, back to where we were in the summer of 2014. So, you know, as some of my colleagues say, put on your big boy pants because the dollar could dive. Fixed income down now, long treasury TLT down 3.26 for the year. That's giving back. It was up 8.95%, so that's giving back about a third of what it was up last year. The intermediate treasury now down 2.15% last year, giving up most of its gains last year. This year, minus 2.15 this year, giving up most of its gains from last year, 2.55. The bond aggregate is down minus 1.13, so corporate bonds outperforming treasuries, not surprisingly. And then junk is now down by almost, it's basically five basis points. Last year it was up 6%. The S&P up 5.64%. Still, it's been correcting down, but still very impressive gains for 1 month, the first month of the year. As I've said many times, at this point, we're now 3 years overdue for a 10 to 20% correction. I bring that up because Goldman Sachs came out and said expect a market correction in the coming months and predicted a 10 to 20% correction. Well, normally I wouldn't quote Goldman. They're not my favorite source of intelligence. But I will say this, and I think I've told you guys this before. In 2016, I sat down for lunch with a Swiss money manager that I sometimes work with, and he had just gone back and gotten every prediction Goldman had made on the equity markets and some other markets over the prior 5 years, and then gone in and looked at to whether or not they'd been correct or not, and came up with the advice that they had been correct in the vast majority of the cases. I think it was 80%. So unfortunately, when you are in a quote unquote managed market, the managers have a good sense of what's happening. And the reality is, if they take a position and then encourage everybody to follow that position, you know, it certainly helps them trade the markets. Okay, so the home builders now up 1% for the year, underperforming the S&P. They outperformed last year. The European ETF up 5.63%, so almost, you know, one basis point away from the U.S. Germany up 6.03%. Developed markets minus North America up 5.02%. China large caps soaring at 14.08%. A lot of that's the falling dollar. Small caps up 9.06%, and the emerging markets up 8.3%. Commodities stronger this year, up 2.31%, and oil up 10%. Wow. So oil's been strong. It opened up strong this year. Gold now up 3.23%. Silver up 2.25%. If we break the 1340 to 1360 line, gold could head up stronger, and there's a good reason for that. The United Kingdom's Royal Mint, which is the institution responsible for producing all the physical money the country has for circulation, has announced the launch of its own gold-backed cryptocurrency. This was the moment I told you, sovereign gold-backed cryptos, that's what's going to be a giant sucking sound out of the non-sovereign and non-asset-backed cryptos. Anyway, so it's they're calling them, they're blockchain based, and they're calling them Royal Mint Gold, RMG. So I expect to see a lot of the sovereign governments follow, and I think it's one of the reasons they wanted to rebalance the gold store. So when the time came to do this, now remember, I've always said, and I've said this ever since the financial coup started, you use fiat currency to steal all the money, but then you use sound money to keep what you've stolen. But watch the sound money guys follow wrong, saying, this is great, this is great. The IRS is squeezing on cryptos. We saw one lovely person post the notice they got from their CPA. Every year we all get instructions from our CPA with a list of all the documentation they want. And sure enough, this year, a complete ledger on all your trading in cryptos. Why are we not surprised? If you're trading cryptos and you haven't read our special report on the tax implications of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, I strongly recommend it to you. It's very, very important. If we have the IRS moving in on cryptos, and remember, I think the one way or the other, the IRS is going to have access to all the NSA intelligence on the basically all positions in trading in the market, which I think will be very rich. So I don't think there are going to be any secrets in this market. So please read that, because I want to make sure you are 100% perfect in your compliance. The last thing you want to get caught on is a squeeze as the sovereign governments issue gold cryptos and the IRS moves in on the non-sovereign cryptos. Bitcoin now trading at 9883, so the people who bought at 18,000 or higher are down 50% or more. I'm in Pasadena to meet with, as I said, with Jason Bowden-Smith. We were coordinating on what we're going to be doing in Uluru in May, and I've had a great time. I'm flying back to Tennessee tomorrow, but I asked Jason to record a segment with me on the technological revolution. Jason is a very successful serial entrepreneur, and he's also an environmental scientist. If you haven't listened to our interviews with Jason on 5G or on his book, Making Waves, I strongly recommend them to you. They're in the archive. But I asked Jason if he would just do a quick interview with me on what he's been learning on the technological revolution so that I could add it to this segment of Money and Markets. So let me play it for you now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here in Pasadena, California with Jason Bowden-Smith, our great entrepreneur ally. We've heard Jason join me to talk about Making Waves in 5G, and I met up with Jason here in Pasadena. He's been on a search, going to conferences, doing investigation into technology as a serial entrepreneur. He's always on the lookout for a good business opportunity, and he was here in California to go to a conference, and I sat down with him and said, okay, tell me what you're learning on technology and the application. And I was so excited about what he said. I said, look, you just have to jump onto Money and Markets for a short segment and give us a briefing on what you're seeing, what you're finding, what you're observing. So, Jason, I can't thank you enough for joining me for Money and Markets.
Catherine, thank you for inviting me, and I'm always willing to share with you and the members of Solari, an organization I truly love. So, thank you.
Change is upon us.
Yeah, and the way I like to describe it, there's 12 to 15 waves hitting your shore. These waves are not small. They're giant. Maybe tsunamis for many of you. And humans always like to think linearly. So they think gradual increases maybe or decreases. This is exponential.
Right.
And we're hitting the top of the curve. Right. So it's coming really quick.
Right.
So just to keep things short, because we could literally be here all day, I've summarized into kind of converged several technologies.
Clusters.
Into a packet. Clusters. Which relate to each other, and we'll quickly breeze through them because it's going to take too long. So the first cluster I put together is energy, connectivity, and transport. And the reason I start with energy is everything is energy.
Right.
Where is it coming from?
Right.
So most of the listeners will know that fossil fuels are on the way out and renewables are on the way in.
Right.
The main renewable is solar. Wind is also going well, and it's really getting serious. Coal plants cost around 5 to 6 cents a kilowatt hour to run. The latest solar panels installed in Dubai, one in Chile, and I think one in New Zealand, are running around 2 to 3 cents.
So the efficiency has improved dramatically. Dramatically.
Through material science and some other technology, which we'll talk about. So with that change, we go, well, that's well and good, but how are we going to capture it?
Right.
So we're seeing lithium state. So not the current lithium ion batteries that we see in our phones. These are solid state lithium batteries that are coming on the market the next few years. And that's going to solve our storage problems. And that was always been the issue. So the Tesla cars will now travel for 3 days instead of 200
miles.
You may not realize, but
the president just slapped a new tariff on solar panels coming from China.
Wow.
And I suspect that it's dovetailing with the fact that now solar is very much at these economics. When you solve the battery problem, it's really in the game in a big way.
Correct.
Right.
So cheap energy allows so much.
So let me just stop and mention one thing. The number one cost of manufacturing in this country is not labor, it's energy.
Correct.
And then, of course, transit energy. If you look at the household budget, energy is in every price they deal with, in every line item they deal with.
So once we have access to really cheap, it may even become almost free energy.
Right.
Without the exotics, which they probably won't bring out because that opens up too many questions, we're going to see massive disruption throughout all of industry, all of transport.
Right.
And it's coming now. It's here. The waves are hitting our shores now. So I want our listeners to get ready for that. So what does it mean? So these autonomous vehicles, which are being trialed all around the world, there's trucks driving up and down highways in Australia and America with a driver laying in the back asleep.
Mm-hmm.
That's going on. So just a couple of tidbits. Uber is buying 24,000 vehicles, autonomous vehicles, that they're going to start using in 2019. They're using Volvos, of course, the safe brand, in 2019 and 2020. So these are driverless cars they're looking at launching in a couple of years' time.
Right.
Other things that are going on, all the manufacturers are going, all the European car manufacturers, which are probably the best in the world, they're all stopping production in about 2030, some a little bit later. So it's only, they're only going to make autonomous cars.
Right.
Electric cars. They're not going to make motor vehicles anymore. We're basically driving computers now.
Right.
We're not driving a car. So another little tidbit, BMW is bringing out a car with no steering wheel and no pedals in 2 years.
Wow.
As a demonstration model. So I want people to know it's coming now. There's a lot of business people in our community, and I want them to start thinking, what impact is this having on a trucking company, courier company, car parking? We're not going to need car parking. And even real estate.
Well, deliveries. Think of all the small businesses that can now afford to do deliveries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, employment's going to be hit quite hard. If you lose trucking as a major employment sector, then that's a big deal. And health is also one that I'm concerned about greatly, which we'll talk about in a minute. So don't think they're stopping there. They are now trialing air taxis. So the Jetsons are coming. They're trialing them in Dubai. I think it'll take a lot longer to get the air taxis approved because the laws and regulations about flying are much stricter than they are on land.
Right.
Some of the rockets that are going, they're now talking about using the rockets to fly, say, from New York to Sydney in 20 minutes.
Right, so instead of it taking me 18... Well, no, because I have to go through Memphis. I mean, it takes me a day to get to Sydney. Now I could get there in an hour.
Correct.
Right.
So it's not just cars. There's so much of this technology coming onto the market now. I really don't want to go to Mars. I'm quite happy to come and see Tennessee if it only takes for 20 minutes.
You know, I wanted to mention this because... And we'll talk about it more in the first quarter wrap-up, but I've been researching the component parts of the economics around space and this real push into space. And one of the things I hadn't realized until I read one of the big research report from one of the brokerage houses, that right now the economics of the suborbital platform are very much driven by TV and TV signals. The you know, it's going to being driven by the internet cloud, so much more internet through the satellites instead of just cable. But the biggest use of the Internet of Things is autonomous cars.
Yeah.
That is going to be the mother lode of the economics of the suborbital platform.
And that's a great segue into the next cluster I've put together. The next section of this cluster is connectivity. Now, you know, I know a lot about EMF.
Right.
And I'm extremely concerned about the rollout of 5G. But what are we doing? We're connecting the whole global population onto the cloud, onto the internet. So
right.
7 billion people
right.
will be online
right.
around 2025.
Right.
That's massive. And they're going from...
Right, and it took really 2011... Smartphones hit when? 2009, 2010?
Well, the state...
But it really took 2011 yeah. to 2016 was the first billion. And that was a remarkable shift.
Mm-hmm.
Now bringing in...
So we're going from about 2.8 billion to 7 billion in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Because they're skipping cable. Like, we
right.
had all the wires and all the cables, and they're going straight to wireless.
Right.
Which I'm not a huge fan of, but that's what they're doing.
Right.
And it's not just the wireless that we're used to in the West. They've got Google or Alphabet, as they're now known, have got these Project Loon. So they've got these balloons, which they flew over Puerto Rico in the disaster and solved their connection problem just to trial it out. It's now
right.
working. So they'll be flying those over Africa and the emerging countries. We've got the satellites and even drones are thinking about putting this technology on. So we're going to saturate our environments with very high density electromagnetic waves. Mm. A lot of them are going to be millimeter waves, which is the new 5G technology. And it's a serious concern for me and
right.
should be for everybody.
Very, very serious concern for me too.
So I want people to think about we're going from connected homes to connected cars to connected buildings to connected cities and to connected people. Everyone's connected through this wireless communication system. We can talk about 5G till the cows come home, but the main concern I have is it's here. It's not coming. So
yeah.
all the major trials are being finalized this year. Next week, the Seoul Winter Olympics will be using 5G as their communication system. In a few months' time, I think it's July, the Commonwealth Games in Australia, in the Gold Coast, will be using 5G. These are the big prototype trials that they're using to finalize the standards
right.
and the technology. And then they're going to roll it out really quickly.
Right. And we just saw a reauthorization in this country of the NSA permitting warrantless surveillance. So when they say warrantless surveillance with 4G, that's a very different kettle of fish than warrantless surveillance with 5G.
Correct.
So we're talking about a deeply invasive electronic mechanism, both physically invasive, but also I think the, you know, the step up in what they can do in terms of mind control is extraordinary.
That's the number one concern, because if they can turn people's emotions and mental state to doing violence or
right.
worse, then...
This is the Kingsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to go into the mitigation strategies, but a couple of things you need to think about. Rural properties,
right.
getting away from the population density, lowering the number of devices you have around you is going to be critical. You need to focus on human resiliency, your health. You need to optimize your health so you can withstand some of the onslaught that's coming.
Right.
Just don't buy the devices.
Right.
So don't buy the Fitbits for the kids. Don't buy the tablets. Don't buy the Amazon Alexa that speaks to you. And all the other things that has anything smart, do not buy it. That's the key.
Now, I need a smartphone for travel, but I leave it in the car.
Yeah.
It's not.
Or put it in airplane mode when you're not using it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Let's move on to the next section, which is I've grouped together software, AI, robots, material science, and 3D printing.
And material science is the one, I think, which is so dramatic. We've covered it on the Salier Report before, but it's hard to kind of understand how impactful it's going to be. So maybe if you could focus there.
All right. the best way is to pick one of the new materials. Graphene is a great example. So graphene is just carbon.
Right.
It's like a carbon pencil. But they've now been able to build it so it's so ultralight, it's 10 times stronger than concrete, and also conducts heat and electricity. It's wow. like a super material.
Right.
I've got some colleagues who are making graphene now in Brisbane, and they're so excited that they think they can't keep up with demand and have to build another factory. So the great thing about material science is the periodic table is now open for discovery.
Right.
So you've got all the elements on the periodic table, all have different capabilities. You can set down a question, feed it into an artificial intelligence, and say, I want to achieve X. And it'll go off and think and spit out, we'll use a little bit of this and a little bit of that and some of that and put it together.
You can use AI to build very specific recipes.
Correct. And they can think about that problem much quicker than you can. So once they come up with the answer, you can then use a 3D printing machine to print out the component. Then you can take that component, prototype it, see if it works. If it's not quite right, go back and refine it. So you can invent new things so quickly, so sharply, and eventually, I can't predict the future, but it's going to be incredible what's coming.
Right.
And throwing in...
Well, it dramatically lowers the cost of trying things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the invention room, as we like to talk about a lot, is going to get wild.
Well, it was really funny because the first time somebody showed me a space elevator, you know, the idea of taking
an
elevator up to the International Space Station, I was like, oh, come on. And then I looked at what graphene could do, if you could make it economic. That was the key, was how do you get graphene down to economic? But somehow we always seem, to find a way to ride that curve down. And you realize, oh, my God, we could build an elevator to the International Space Station.
I know, it's insane.
Yeah.
Another little example is the reason solar cells are going to be so successful and so cheap is a new material. A new compound they've developed. I always get it wrong, but perovskite, PEROVSKITE. And it's going to bring the price of solar panels and the efficiency to levels that's it. There is no more fossil fuels. So all these materials at the base, just like energy is for conductivity and transport and all that, material science is to 3D printing, is to robots, is to even software and AI because it impacts so much. And they all converge together. And when you get these waves all coming together, it's just amazing what's going to happen and happen so quickly. A couple of little things about AI that we should know. Sophia became a citizen a couple of months ago. So Dubai
I don't buy that. That was a trick.
But this is where they want to take it. We need to be aware of the direction.
Yeah, they want us to be machines and robots to be humans. I get that.
And a lot of people say, oh, machines don't have any empathy. Well, a New Zealand company called Soul Machines has now developed AI and software for call centres and any customer service where the level of empathy in this AI is actually nearly superior to most humans who come to work cranky sometimes. another quick one, HireVue, which is AI interviewing people around the world for a job.
Uh-huh.
And they can do all the culling for you and you get a couple of candidates that you can go and vet
actually,
and interview.
Actually, for a busy executive, it's a huge time saver.
And this is what technology is doing, productivity. You know, the automation and productivity is just going to go
through the roof. Here's the challenge. If you look at the economy, you have the private sector, you have the government sector, and anything that increases productivity in the private sector is being applied in a way that reduces productivity in the general population, the government sector, and the net is a negative. Mm-hmm. So productivity growth is slowing, and productivity in the general population is negative, and you got a huge negative return on investment on the government money. So part of what this new technology is going to have to do is let us look at things on an integrated basis, which is not what the leadership wants.
So I don't want to mention blockchain and cryptocurrencies too much, but you were right, Catherine. What was the announcement today?
The UK has announced they're putting out a gold cryptocurrency. I said, here it comes. Here, the giant sucking sound into the sovereign blockchain cryptocurrencies backed with gold.
And they've brought out the big hitter.
Okay, for 20 London. Years I've been saying they're going to steal everything with fiat currency, and once they've stolen it, they're going to protect what they stole with sound money. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we could talk about blockchain a lot, but we're not going to. I'll just mention one thing for the marketers out there, which was kind of cool that I saw. There's a company called VBlock, and they're going to have VAtoms as their token. And it's experiential currency. So think about Pokemons, that Pokemon craze where people are going crazy. Well, now you can use it for marketing. So you could take Starbucks coffee and you could have all these, you know, virtual kind of Starbucks coffee cups around the place and get people all excited in that currency so they can redeem stuff for coffee. So there's a lot of interesting business opportunities, and blockchain's going to really disrupt financials.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I've always been excited about crowdfund because crowdfund gives you a way of financing something that also creates the field. So you're nurturing and building a field at the same time you're financing, and it's integrated. It's a very holistic thing. You know, Wall Street didn't get it because to them it's small amounts, but the reality is with blockchain and new technologies, you don't need large amounts of capital. You know, so in fact, a technology that allows you to radically reduce the capital you need and finance it as you're, you know, contiguous with building your consumer markets, you know, it's infinitely more productive, not for Wall Street, but for everybody else. So, you know, for entrepreneurs, it's great. What I find, the one of the applications I find really exciting about cryptocurrencies is ICOs.
Yeah.
Because if you can use ICOs to get around, and it'll have to be offshore for now, but to get around the, you know, extraordinary regulatory blockages to prevent, you know, all of the United States is overwhelmed by regulation designed to make it impossible for you to do anything without Wall Street.
Yeah.
And it's in my opinion, it's destroyed our economy relative to what it could be. And so if entrepreneurs can use ICOs to get around this, you know, there's tremendous possibilities.
And what do you think the impact of 7 billion people coming online has to that field that you're talking about?
Well, I think for most Americans, it's going to be incredibly shocking. And for most of the developed world, because I was telling you the other day, I was watching this wonderful interview between Jack Ma and Bill Clinton and Elizabeth Holmes, who's the CEO of Theranos, which is the blood testing company that basically went from being worth $9 billion to $0 billion, you know, because of really seriously fraudulent behavior, according to the Wall Street Journal, and I think they're right. Anyway, so on one hand, you had two people who were completely spoiled by government-created capital and living in la-la. You know, they're living in la-la land in terms of money. And here's Jack Ma, who's built a business all designed around what can I do to help people. One of the things he always explains is they didn't make money for the first 3 years because they're just trying to help people. It's very much like the Solari report. We're just trying to help people, and then, you know, we see what can we do to cover our costs. And Jack Ma is talking about real markets, real people, real needs at a highly granular, at a subatomic particle level, because that's his world. His world is satisfying things on an economic basis at a subatomic particle level, and he loves it. He finds it infinitely fascinating. And Bill Clinton and Elizabeth Holmes are looking at him, and they're just like, they don't know what to do.
Stunned.
It's like two parallel systems, because he's coming from hunger. You know, here's a guy who's coming from extreme poverty. He's dealing with thousands of entrepreneurs who are coming from extreme hunger, and they are hungry.
Yeah.
And you know something? They will deal at a subatomic particle level with incredible intent. They will bring a Goldman Sachs intensity to a 10-cent deal.
Yeah.
And you know, America, I came back from China in 1997. And I had gone to China to see if I couldn't create several database development joint ventures with different Chinese universities and some of their satellites. And I came back. I was so excited, Jason, because I had, one of the things I'd calculated was I could do my data servicing in America. It was the database development. You know, for me to hire somebody out of MIT, I had to pay $150,000 to $200,000. I could get an MIT PhD in China for $10,000. So I came back, and I was so excited because everybody there was ready to invent and create and do. And I came back, and I sat down with my team, and all the senior people were just, like, stuck. All they wanted were government contracts and $125,000 and to live in. And I thought, you know, maybe I should shut the company down and move to China. So this is going to be a culture wave that we're not ready for.
I agree.
And here's the other thing. This is what Joseph Farrell has talked about and Saker has talked about on the Salieri Report. And I know I'm going on, but forgive me. The multipolar world is a complex world. It's a 26-track world. Americans have been dumbed down into a 2-track world. And now you're talking about millions of entrepreneurs who love the 26-track, can function at the 26-track, and they're just going to, you know, and you have two choices. You could look at them and say, here's the opportunity of my life because I have thousands of potential customers or partners who are willing to deal with the complexity. Or you can look at it and say, this is really scary.
Yeah. And we need to appreciate they're going to have access to the same tools and toys that we have.
Right.
So they go straight to develop level tools and toys.
Right.
So watch out, developed world. Here they come.
Here they come.
All right. I want to finish. Well, maybe not finish. The second last one is about health and longevity. And this is really important because at Solari, we always talk about we're going to choose humanity or the inhuman path. And health and longevity is a classic example where this is playing out. So let's do the artificial. I call them the silly boys. SI stands for silicon, so the silicon boys. And they believe, they truly believe that they're born, the baby is actually a biological computer.
They see think we're machines.
Yeah, they think we're machines.
Right.
And that's the way they think. And they want to save humanity by making us better machines. So that's their mindset. So the technology they're rolling out is things like CRISPR-Cas9 and CAR-T technology, which takes your cells, genetically modifies them, either internally or takes them out of the body externally. It's CAR-T technology. Genetically modifies the cancer gene or something that's wrong with you, then regrows that genetically modified gene a billion times, a billion cells, and then puts it back in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're creating GMO humans. That's their way of solving the problem.
Now, I want you to say that again because you slipped over it. GMO humans.
That's what I call them. That's my label.
Right. I introduced you while we're out here to Scott Tipps of the National Health Federation, and he has a new cover on their magazine that they're trying to market GMO food as biofortified.
Yeah, they'll spin it every
so they'll
they
be
can.
Biofortified humans.
Well, and the way they're spinning it is that we're going to live to where 120, and if you live long enough, you'll actually take your biological machine, your consciousness, and put it in the same avatar and live forever. That's their promise. They also want to put Google on your brain. They're going to put a chip in your neurocortex and actually wirelessly connect that to the cloud. So instead of, you know, looking at a map and saying, I need to go here, you'll blink your eyes and you'll know where you're going or something like that. It's not going to work. The brain's not going to cop that wireless chip. you're just going to end up with a brain tumor.
Right.
But this is the way they're thinking. The next layer is, well, we'll fix that brain tumor by putting nanobots into your body.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to make all these little nanobots. They're so small. They're like atom size. And they're going to give them commands to go in and chew away that tumor or fix your immune system, and that's how we're going to deal with any of those.
So every time your body creates a symptom to warn you that there's a problem, they'll destroy the symptom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the underlying problem, not the underlying cause, but just the symptom, the Band-Aid. That's not the approach that I'm taking. I wish them well, and people will do that, and I think it's fine. If that's their journey, that's great. I hope they go to Mars and do it, but if they're going to do it here, I'll just have to put up with it. So the mid-ground, where I think the kind of natural is meeting the artificial, and there's nothing wrong with artificial technology because we use it every day. We're using it now to have this conversation.
Exactly.
So we need to think about it in positive terms. And I'm really excited about the stem cells. It's promised a lot over the last 10 years, but they're nearly there. In 2 to 3 years, you'll see treatments where you can rebuild knee cartilage just using adult-level stem cells. They don't need to get baby ones and put them into you. They're your own stem cells, and you'll regrow that knee cartilage, which will last about 15 years.
That's amazing.
And it's not just knees. It'll be, you know, the discs in your back and, and eventually organs. So the stem cell has a lot of promise.
Again, I want to focus... You're talking about using your own stem cells.
Correct. Not external ones, your own ones.
Right.
So let's move into the natural. Before we do, I just want to talk a little bit about diagnostics. Everyone's getting excited about diagnostics because we can now have a lab in our hand. Like you and I visited...
I just bought one.
Correct.
Right.
To test our metabolic rates, which would take a visit to a million-dollar lab sitting there for a few hours getting all the tests done, we can now do in 10 minutes in our home.
Right. So I'm walking around with
a lab
in my hand. Right.
Yeah, and then we can do your hormone panel by saliva or urine on a little test strip and send that off. We're getting totally empowered. So this self-empowerment with this information, we have to learn it, though. We have to, understand it ourselves. And then you could use Skype to ring an expert that you trust and discuss the results and the strategies. You might want to take the nanobots.
Right.
I'm not, but there's lots of different ways you can get well. The great news, I love the way the universe works. Whenever there is something that I don't really resonate with, there's always the opposite. So we always balance out. I don't want to call it good and bad because people think the nanobots is good, but I don't.
Right.
So you always have a balance. And the natural process is so exciting. We have quantum biology. These are neuroscientists and biologists and chemists now going into the subatomic and working out how does life actually work? How does the human body actually work? And they've discovered that, it's all about energy. So we've been focusing a lot of money, like I think it was 1971 when Nixon came out and declared war on cancer. We've now spent $9 trillion on cancer. And I had a friend who died of it a couple of weeks ago from brain cancer from, I believe, a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
We've been looking at the wrong DNA. There's a second DNA called mitochondrial DNA. This is not your double helix genome.
Right.
It's the one that regulates energy. It's kind of your software. And they've worked out how that operates efficiently. And surprise, surprise, it's all about what the ancients and the elders have always taught us. It's about reconnecting back to nature. So it's all about light physics, water, and magnetism grounding. Now, I'm not going to go into the details because we're going to be here all day. But it's really important that we now know how biology is designed to work with nature. And if we follow that, our resiliency gets incredibly strong.
Right.
Now, the other great news is there's some scientists led by Hungarians who are now looking at the proton side of the atom at a subatomical level and have realized that it's not just hydrogen, which is what's generated in the TCA cycle in the mitochondria. There's an isotope called deuterium. There's actually two isotopes of hydrogen, one called tritium, which is radioactive and decays. We're not talking about that one. We're talking about deuterium that has an extra neutron on the particle. And they have discovered that too much deuterium in your body can lead to that TCA cycle not functioning properly. So your hydrogen recycling machine is getting clogged up. And this is what's slowing down the mitochondria, and this is what's causing heteroplasmy and all these mutant mitochondria that basically makes you tired and sick. And a lot of researchers are now showing that 90% of all diseases, all chronic diseases, are now mitochondria related. So these guys are using some deuterium depleting techniques, including water, food, and even breathing exercises, to actually lower the deuterium and having tremendous success with cancer.
Right. Right.
And I know if they can do it with cancer, we can do it with all mitochondrial diseases. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making any recommendation, but I've been studying this for a long time.
I introduced you as an entrepreneur. I should point out you're an environmental scientist.
Yeah, I do have a double degree in science. And I've been researching solutions, natural health solutions, as a hobby all my life. We won't talk about why, but there's a good reason why. And I think we may have found it. Now, we won't know. When we will know, I should know. At Uluru.
I think part, yeah, so we're going to have a lot to say on this in Uluru, because I'll have spent several months walking around with my laboratory. But here's what's so interesting. You have this explosion of knowledge about health and applications in health. And, you know, we have an entire section of the U.S. stock market which is levitating.
Yeah.
On overpriced healthcare, overpriced pharmaceuticals. In fact, we just see a group of the billionaires, including the president, come out and say, you know, they're ganging up to bring the prices down radically. We see now in the United States 85 natural health doctors assassinated, stabbed, murdered.
That's incredible.
Well, that's what happens when you're trying to protect a highly oversubsidized market. So we're coming into a period where the level of innovation is just spinning out of control. And so many of these things are going to be being tried and applied at the same time. So it's going to be a very interesting time. But each person listening to this is going to have to take the time to be their own doctor.
And what does that do? If you become your own doctor, you take away the patient. If you take away the patient, you don't need all this healthcare system.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. I have some great doctors, a great nutritionist, great doctors, great chiropractor. So I think you're still going to need those people.
Oh, they're not going away.
Yeah.
I'm talking about all the infrastructure, all the hospitals, all the surgeries,
right.
All the big operations, a lot of the drugs.
So here's what's going to happen. 5 to 10%. You know, because people went into healthcare because they wanted to heal and they wanted to save. You're going to have 5 to 10% of the doctors and the healthcare practitioners who know the official reality isn't going to true. They're going to grab all this stuff and they're going to go, fabulous, now I can really help people. Do you know what I mean? So it's going to be very, it's back to what you said about the wave. If you're a doctor, if you're a nurse listening to this, you want to figure out how in your practice you can surf this wave, because the wave is, you can either surf it or it's going to drown
you. It's going to wipe you out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing I want people to think about, if you were to live to 120 years old now.
How are you going to do that?
Yeah. Think about your pension fund or superannuation fund if you're from Australia. It's a big jump. Like it's nearly adding 30%.
It's particularly a big jump when all the pension funds are getting cut.
Yeah, we won't start that. So I know we've gone over time and it was bound to happen, but you and I get asked a lot about children.
Right.
So what are we going to do for the kids and the grandkids that are in our life?
Right.
So there's a couple of things I want to mention. The first recommendation, and I can't recommend this highly enough, is keep the placenta. So when your baby is born or your grandchild's born, you want to keep the placenta. That is the highest concentration of the most important stem cells.
For your family.
And for that child.
For that child.
So that child might be 60 when they get something. They can go back to that placental stem cells, which is...
Now, there are companies that store them. Now.
There are companies that store them.
Right.
And there's quite a few and more coming. That is going to be a very important resource coming down the track. I know a guy who's collecting baby teeth because one of the other stores of stem cells is baby teeth. But I'd rather use my own stem cells if I'm going to go into this. So I've got baby cells.
Right, so that's a resource for that child that you want to preserve for that
Correct.
Child. Right. Right.
Schooling's a big issue in most countries now. We've got compulsory vaccinations in Australia. You guys have got Common Core, which apparently been stopped.
It's getting
which
stopped.
Is great. So homeschooling as an option is really important, and maybe the Waldorf or Steiner schools if your philosophies are in line with them. Most schools now are going wireless. They will be going to 5G. They'll be given virtual reality and augmented reality headsets These are going to run at 60 gigahertz. They're going to fry the kids' brains. You've got to be totally aware of it. And, you know, homeschooling, getting together with a few friends and starting a little mini school might be an option for many. The other important thing for every child is, because the myelination in their brain is not developed to about 20. So the brain is very vulnerable to EMFs, child brain. That's why, and people won't tell you, the neurosurgeons won't tell you because I think they're gagged, the number one cancer in a child, which is defined as below 15, is now glioblastoma and related brain tumours. That's the brain tumours that all the studies find from having a mobile phone or technology to your head.
Right.
It now surpassed leukemia and the blood cancers for the first time. And we haven't introduced this new tech yet.
Right.
So you need to have a technology management plan, hardwire your house. We won't go into all the details, but you need to have a plan.
To protect your child's brain.
Yeah, and part of that plan is actually getting into nature. It's really, every holiday you plan should be a nature holiday. Go camping, go to the beach, really focus on getting more nature time with your kids. The other thing we talked about even at lunch today with one of your friends is building a sleep sanctuary. So you want to shut off all tech, even all light, and if you can, even electricity from the sleeping area. It's really important because that's when you rejuvenate. That's when your body gets a chance to repair.
Right.
And it can't repair if you've got a wireless, you know, beaming in the background and your smartphone next to your bed. It's just not going to happen, or a baby monitor next to the cot. You just got to really develop a sleep sanctuary. That's the main tips. When it comes to education, we hear a lot about STEM, which we'll get to in a minute, but education to me is more about principles, and the ones that I like is passion. Passion is really important, and building... Your child or grandchild is really interested in something. It may be something it doesn't interest you, but it interests them. And that life interest becomes a mission, even
if
as a child.
If you're competing with 7 billion people in a marketplace, your only chance of adding value is if you're passionate about it.
Correct. And it's going to get you up in the morning. It's going to motivate you. So it's really important. Curiosity. You got to keep asking questions. Get your kids to... And when they say, why? Keep the why. Don't think, oh, we should shut up. All this is why. You know, curiosity is really important. Of course, imagination. John Rappaport would shoot me if I didn't mention imagination. So, so important.
Right.
Don't lose your imagination. But don't forget about critical thinking.
Right.
There is so much fake news and we've got information overload. You really have to find that signal in the noise. So the best way to do that is by learning critical thinking. And the last one, which is an entrepreneurial term, is called grit.
Right.
This is persistence. This is passion and persistence. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. You know, there's no such thing as an overnight success. You just got to keep going. Get up, back off the floor, go again. So grit is really important. When it comes to subjects and university degrees and so forth, I would steer away from accounting and law, which was always the ones that my parents are always pushing me to do. And I think they're going to get automated much quicker. Like if you look at your own accounting software now, it's amazing what you can do with this one
bookkeeper. Right, they say it's going to get automated pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think they're open for
it. Now, I'm still, for many reasons, going to want a CPA and an attorney to interpret it all
Correct.
For me. But
the bookkeeping is now automated, really, with all the new processes they've got and scanning technology and so forth. So they talk about STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. It misses one really important part, and this is where Joseph Farrell would be very happy to hear, that you need to put a big A in the STEM.
STEM.
It becomes STEAM. And it's a capital A. Arts, culture, music, it's so critical.
Right.
And it stimulates all those other principles, the curiosity, the imagination. So arts is really important. So
one of the things I wanted to mention, studies have shown that if you want your children to be highly financially literate, don't teach them about money, teach them math.
Okay.
Make sure they're great at math. And then they can tell that this is double the size of that. And, you know, that's what you want to get. So that M on the STEAM, I think, is very important.
Yeah. Well, I think that's enough. Sorry for taking so much time. I hope they enjoyed it.
No, this is, you know, it's really interesting. We had a great article that I posted this year in One Subscriber, and it was all about how fast the autonomous cars and the different things were coming. And they said, you know, I know you've been saying this shift from 2.0 to 3.0 is coming. Mm-hmm. But I'm just now beginning to realize what you mean and what it is, because it's hard to envision if you haven't. And one of the things I'll say, I really believe one of the reasons that the financial coup d'etat happened was they saw where the technology was going to go. And they said, you know, we're going to suck all the money out of the old world, build the new world, and then just they got to come over, because there's no point in explaining this. The market won't function. People are too slow. And so we're just going to have a giant sucking sound of the money out, switch it, and that will pull them in. They'll have to go. So I think a lot of what happened in the 80s and 90s and aggregating that capital was in response to where they saw it going.
Yeah.
I mean, once you see where it's going, it makes sense. It makes sense. The other thing that concerns me is once they realized everybody could live into 120,
yeah.
They said, okay, well, maybe we need to lower the fertility rate.
Which they are doing.
Yeah. They're lowering the life expectancy and they're lowering the fertility rate. Okay, well, Jason, it's always a pleasure. It's always inspiring to speak with you. And I will see you in Uluru.
Can't wait.
I should mention, we still have two places left.
Wow.
We have two places. We didn't have two places last week, but Unfortunately somebody for family reasons couldn't come. So we now have two places. So there's still a chance to hang out with Jason for a week in Uluru.
Take that ticket. I would. And I'm not saying because we need to sell them. It's just a trip of a lifetime.
It is a trip of a lifetime.
And we have some really important news to share with that audience as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll see you in Uluru.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our hero this week is Congressman Dennis Kucinich, former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, former mayor of Cleveland and former congressman from the state of Ohio, former state representative. He is running for governor of Ohio on the Democratic ticket. I'm very committed to helping him. I would love to see Dennis Kucinich as the governor of Ohio. I think he would make an excellent governor. He has very deep knowledge of the local, the state, and the federal level, all as it pertains to both Ohio and what's going on in the world. I think he would attract an incredible quality of person to work with him and inspire and all the people working in government, the citizens of Ohio, to work together. You're going to be hearing a lot more from me about him, but I'm full on, and one of the things I'm going to be doing is figuring out how to head up to Ohio and do an event for him. I can't say enough good things about him. I think this is one of the highest integrity people I've ever known in government. And again, you're going to hear more and more, but to me, the number one issue is integrity. The number two issue is experience, and he's got it all. So I'm very much looking forward to that. If we're going to turn America around, we've got to turn it around one town, one county, and one state at the time. And when you have a great governor who knows the local government and the local beat, as well as the federal, that's where you have the kind of linchpin that can turn the whole thing around. So Kucinich becoming governor of Ohio is something that's very, very exciting, and an opportunity for all of us, whether we live in Ohio. It's a great opportunity for the citizens of Ohio, but it's a great opportunity for all of us, because Ohio is a very strategic and critical state in terms of turning around everything in America. It's a state with a lot of opportunity, and again, you'll be hearing more from me. Our codes got snarled on the website this week, and Monday night I came back and it was all snarled up, and Darlene Hickman, all of our systems guys were completely, we were all befuddled. We couldn't figure it out. Darlene Hickman, our chief of operations, logged in Tuesday morning and said, oh, it's really simple. Let me fix it. It was great. So Darlene Hickman is a marvelous and head of operations, but she's another hero this week. I finally wanted to give a shout out to Steve Bannon. The Economist wrote a farewell to Steve Bannon. that made some very valid points. I wanted to read a paragraph from it. Mr. Bannon was largely motivated by his concern for an issue of existential importance to Republicans, a widening gulf between their mainstream leaders and the disaffected white working class supporters who represent a big chunk of their support. Given power on the coattails of a victory for Mr. Trump that he did much to bring about, Mr. Bannon had an opportunity to narrow that gap and therefore transform Americans' landscape. He blew it spectacularly for many reasons, including hubris, the intemperance of his character, the nastiness of his tactics, and the incoherence of his ideas. The gulf persists, and if the Republicans learn nothing from Mr. Bannon's missed opportunity, they will suffer for it. Steve Bannon really understood the economic opportunity and was deeply on the side of humans, and I'm going to be exceptionally sorry to see him go. I don't disagree with the economist that to a certain extent he blew it spectacularly, but I also think there are a lot of forces working to help him blow it spectacularly. So, you know, it's beginning to look like rollerball or roller derby inside of Washington, D.C. But we needed somebody with his talent and his brilliance and his commitment to reverse inequality. And he was one of the few who was really willing to fight for it. And I, for one, am going to be very sorry to see him gone. Our movie this evening, I confess I haven't gotten a chance to watch it. I've been trying to get a hold of it, but haven't been able to. But I'm going to watch it. First thing is Jeffrey Smith's new documentary, Secret Ingredients. I know what's in it. I know it's going to be fabulous. Every documentary Jeffrey Smith has ever made is outstanding. In fact, his last documentary, Genetic Roulette, was documentary of the year on the Salieri Report in 2012. He and his Institute for Responsible Technology have fought tirelessly against the corruption of the food system, and he's someone who's very much worth supporting. So keep an eye out. Secret Ingredients. It's going to inspire you to really be careful about the food that you eat. Our interview this evening is Harry Blaser's next interview for the food series of Dr. Don Huber, a retired colonel of U.S. military intelligence, a very distinguished professor and scientist from Purdue University. Dr. Huber wrote a letter to the Secretary of Agriculture, which I quote in the commentary. Let me read it to you. Dear Mr. Secretary, a team of senior plant and animal scientists have recently brought to my attention the discovery of an electron microscopic pathogen that appears to significantly impact the health of plants, animals, and probably human beings. Based on a review of the data, it is widespread, very serious, and is in much higher concentrations in Roundup Ready soybeans and corn, suggesting a link with the RR gene or more likely the presence of Roundup. The organism appears new to science. This is highly sensitive information that could result in a collapse of U.S. soy and corn export markets and significant disruption of domestic food and feed supplies. So here is someone who used to be the deputy director of the health section of military intelligence, whose job in military intelligence was to make sure we knew how to protect the food supply and did protect the food supply from biowarfare threats, who's basically saying our food system is in danger of being destroyed by such threats. As you can imagine, the letter brought a huge amount of pushback. Harry basically, it's an amazing interview because Harry brings out from him how profound the threats to the food system are and underscores how absolutely careful you have to be about the food that you eat. One of the things I constantly stress, and I stressed it again during the pension fund interview, you cannot save money by eating second-rate food. In fact, food that's not really food, food that has mysterious pathogens in it, food that has GMOs in it that are killing people, is Jeffrey Smith's documentary so absolutely beautifully described. You can't save money by eating fake food and then put that money to finance the companies, you know, in 401ks and pension funds that then finance the companies that are destroying your food system. I mean, that's never, ever going to work. There's no way you can save enough money to protect yourself from many decades of chronic illness, you know, when in fact you're eating fake food that's poisoning you. So you've got to get the poison out. Anyway, this is a very, very sobering interview, and I encourage you to listen to it, because if you're not inspired to be wildly careful about, if you're not a picky eater now, you should be, and you certainly will after you listen to this interview. So big kudos for Harry getting this interview, and major kudos for Dr. Huber. What an absolutely courageous and inspiring man. His courage will absolutely inspire you. Ask Catherine. One person asked me why we had a picture of Will Smith in the in Control 101 when, in fact, he made some quote that I was not aware of. I forget what he came out and said, but apparently it was something that the subscriber thought was contradictory to my opinions. Will Smith was played a lawyer, an enemy of the state, who's basically targeted by the NSA and the black budget guys. And I constantly talk about how I played Will Smith in real life. And so that's why our wonderful graphics artist, Ben Lazzardi, chose the picture of Will Smith. We weren't aware of the quote. And it's not a requirement at Solari. If you're a talented and amazing person who've done a lot of great things, we don't always agree with you, and you don't always agree with us, but we appreciate your talent. Someone sent in the story of the Fitbits. Various organizations have been collecting and mapping out the signal thrown off by everybody's Fitbit and has been able to basically map out lots of secret facilities around the world where the army personnel are wearing Fitbits. It's kind of funny. Okay, next person writes, I appreciate your experts and information. I remember in the past you talked about geoengineering and weather manipulation. There seem to be so many dire issues, but I believe that this one is really important. When you did that wonderful work with Professor Skidmore, I thought, ha, so that is where the money comes to fund the planes in the constant spring. Exactly. My husband and I were in Palm Springs 2 weeks ago, and the skies looked like something from Dune, crisscross lines and smeared clouds everywhere. Yet, there were people riding their bikes and sitting by the pool oblivious. I hope you will address this issue too this year. Dane Wigington from Geoengineering has been gathering and analyzing information on this issue for the past 12 years. Patents, photos, legal team, water tests, plant tests, and a list of agencies contracted with either denied, deflect, or outright lie. I would appreciate your consideration of this topic. Couple things. If we want to stop this, you have to cut off the money. So my focus is figuring out how we can all organize to cut off the money. That's number one. So I continue to work on the missing money, because my piece is, let's switch the funding from something that's so negative to something positive. In terms of understanding the global spring, what it is, I still think the two-hour special that I did many years ago with Clifford Carnicom is still the best. I check in every year with Clifford, and he says no change. Not to say we can't drill down and find out more about what's in it, and do more testing. He has a lab and continues to do testing. But if you haven't listened to or read that original two-hour special with Clifford, I did a one-hour interview with Clifford, and then the second one was the two-hour special, and it still stands as one of the great all-time Solari reports. I do think this phenomena is clearly very, very important, but I think the way you have to stop it is you have to bring transparency to what is the black budget, what is the hidden system of finance, what is it financing, and why. And it's a much bigger piece than this. We also did a great interview with Dr. Gwen Scott about how to protect yourself physically from the impact of global spring. And I would also encourage you to listen to that, because it's very, very important that you do. Hi, Catherine. I'm currently a subscriber. I've inherited some money and want to know which direction to go regarding investing. I managed my mom's financing for about 20 years and did very well with NNN leases and dividend-producing investments. Going forward, I would like to build my portfolio, but it seems to me that there's going to be some crash of some sort. I also need to actualize an income from these investments. Can you point me to an article or book that would be helpful in making decisions such as these? In the best books for 2018 in the web presentation, and it will be in the PDF when we produce it for the annual wrap-up, I recommend best books for 2018, and two of them are from James Montier, Behavioral Investing, Value Investing. I think they'll be very helpful to you. If you look at the story about the bull equity market in News Trends and Stories Part 1, there's some great links to some great articles during the year in 2017 from Jeremy Grantham, who James Montier works for, and then an article by James Montier, another one from Guru Focus. And I recommend all of those, Montier, Grantham, and the Guru Focus article. Your key question is timing. When do you enter the market, and do you want to go long or be hedged? My way of dealing with the possibility of a major correction is to keep most money hedged, not all, but most. I've discussed this in the last couple of equity overviews, so you might want to listen to that. You know, the question is, do you want to wait? We're 3 years overdue for a 10 or 20% correction. We now see Goldman saying we're going to get a 10 to 20% correction. We certainly started to correct a little bit, but that doesn't mean we're into that correction. But it would not surprise me to see one in the first quarter. If we don't, you know, I can't believe we're not going to get one in May, but you may not want to wait that long. I would be very discerning, but I would recommend those two books and those articles. I would consume those first. And take a serious look if you go in before a correction at a hedging strategy. You give up some of your upside, including some of your dividend income. But I think in this environment, if we get a 10 or 20% down and you're hedged, you can sell the hedge and buy cheap at the perfect moment. And it's going to help your long-term returns greatly. Hi, Catherine. I've decided this year to withhold part of my taxes to protest indiscriminate killing of civilians and massive corruption in the military that you've done such a good job of covering. Do you have any advice on someone like me? And then you provided your letter, which I put into the notes. I think it is extremely important to enforce the laws, not break the laws. Now, there's big controversy as to whether or not there really is a law that requires us to pay personal income taxes. Put that aside, I'm much more interested in finding a way to organize at the state and local level to do escrows. I don't think that doing it individually will work. If it does work, then you need to be prepared before you send this letter to have organized your attorneys and your defense. So I would not do this, and I would not write the letter until I had worked with my attorneys to prepare what my defense was and was prepared to publicize it. The other thing, I wasn't clear about why you referred to Rumsfeld in 2001, the $2.3 trillion. And didn't use the $21 trillion or link to the documentation for the $21 trillion. So I would make sure, if you're going to bring up the missing money, that you make sure you have current numbers. Anyway, so you need to be prepared with your attorneys ahead of time as to what your defense is, because I think the chances of an effort to indict or prosecute are very serious. I am from Boston 45 years and now in St. Louis 25 years. Cliff High says mini ice age is coming, so somewhere down south, I would guess. But he just moved to Washington State. Yes, that's a very good question. If we're coming into a mini ice age, why did Cliff move to Washington State? Maybe Cliff isn't the guy you should be listening to on this topic. Too many rednecks in Georgia, too many unprepared elderly in Florida. I've been to East Texas and hated that. Bill Holter says South Texas has plenty of guns, so safe there. Please help. First of all, I don't know what is true regarding the weather, and I'm a great believer in choosing my pathway according to the service I'm supposed to, or the purpose I'm supposed to serve, as opposed to trying to get away from the risks. There are way too many risks to be able to address them all. So I'm not worried about the risks. I'm worried about making sure I do a great job at serving my purpose. So if I was going to move my base camp in the U.S., I would go to either Pennsylvania, Utah, or Idaho, which hardly reflects the strategy of Ice Age. If I wanted to go further south, I would consider North Carolina or the Hill Country in Texas. There's some people who like the Florida Panhandle. A lot of this is finding the right town with the right cluster of people that you want to spend time with and can trust. And of course, you know, if you really want warmth, you can go further south, get closer to the equator. Anyway, but those are my suggestions of places I would consider in the U.S. The other thing I would say is I'm not looking for a place. I chose the current place where I have the equivalent of my base camp because I wanted to have as low overhead and low cost of infrastructure as possible. And I wanted, I certainly wanted to be in a very rural area. Now that 5G is coming, I really want to be in a rural area. But I was not looking for one place. I'm looking to stay mobile, flexible, and resilient. Go look at one of my favorite movie scenes that's up at Solari. Do a search for Movement is Life. It's with Brad Pitt. It's a scene from World War Z, which is a dreadful zombie movie. But Brad Pitt is explaining to someone that, you know, that they have to keep moving. And he says, movement is life. The people in situations like this who get up and move when they need to are the ones who live, and those who won't move are the ones who won't make it. So I want to keep my possessions light and my overhead small and be prepared to move and stay resilient. Hi, Catherine. Just offering a suggestion for a possible interview on Solari regarding targeted individuals, as I think he's excellent in terms of his research and background and experience. He is Dr. Eric Karlstrom. Yes, he's one of the people on my list. I'm trying to figure out who to get to do targeted individuals, and I think that he's clearly on that list, so I appreciate that recommendation. That's important. Thank you for your work. Just finished listening to the fourth quarter wrap-up. Could you offer your take on the mass citizenship granted to the million-plus immigrants who then demonstrated like a bunch of demanding entitled brats, in my opinion, at the White House? Like many others who voted for Trump, I am profoundly disturbed by this action on his part. Nothing will ever be enough for the people who want open borders. This is complex. So you have two groups. You have a group of young people who were basically promised and financed to move up through the country. If you listen to our interview with Zach Taylor, you'll understand who they are. And they were basically young people who were recruited and brought in here, made promises. That's one. The second is a group who came here very young with their parents and have nothing to go but, you know, they were very young when they came here. This is the only country or culture they've known, all their friends, their network. They have no place, no way of integrating back into whatever country their family came from. And as a practical matter, sending them back there is a nightmare for them, a nightmare for that country. And the reality is many of these young people have the potential to be very healthy for our economy if you look at the demographics. And frankly, the Latin American and Mexican populations have done a much better job of integrating in than many of the Muslim groups in Europe. So there's a lot of human pressure to get them to stay, not to mention the promises that were made when they were recruited in, and now it's going to be very embarrassing to reverse it back. So there's a human tragedy story, there's an economic benefit story here to America, and there is all the political difficulties and diplomatic difficulties of sending them back, and the economic expense. So anyway, but the reality is Trump, if you're the president, you're not a dictator, or certainly not yet, and you have to negotiate. So this is one where if Trump agrees or goes along, he's negotiating a compromise. And, you know, I think Trump is very committed to getting our immigration policies back in accordance with the laws are. So in rebuilding the alignment between what the law says we're supposed to do and what we're doing, But the reality is, if he compromises, it's because in politics you have to compromise to get a lot of different things done. And he needs the Democrats. You know, there's some things he can get done with 50 votes, and he has 51 Republicans, but there are other things he's got to have. So, for example, they need a cleanup bill on taxes. They can't get that without the Democratic vote. So it is what it is. It's politics, and the Democrats have power. Hello, Catherine. First, my appreciation and offer your research and commitment to bringing it to people like me is indescribable and life-changing, and I'm sure you hear that a lot. Yes, but I appreciate it. MSU connections. I'm curious what your impression is, if you have one, of any link between Skidmore's public announcement of the missing $21 trillion and the recent fallout of Michigan State University's president and athletic director, and likely more to come, given the information revealed in ESPN Outside the Line report that's been all over ESPN today, connected with MSU's systematic cover-up and mishandling of the Larry Nassar MD case and noise over sentencing this week. I've not spent a lot of time looking at the Nassar case. I know that there's a much deeper story there, and it looks like MSU is taking the fall for it. It's not unlike the Vatican taking the fall for the pedophilia and the Masons. And intelligence community skating. So I know there's a deeper story there. I don't know what it is. Given Skidmore's experience in research, sort of researching what's going on in the country that led him to the missing money story and to working with me, I think it's highly unlikely that there was any connection between his starting to do the research and what happened with the Nassar case. I think the question is, given how supportive Betsy DeVos's family has been of MSU, you know, what was surprising for all of us was MSU, after Skidmore published the report and Forbes published the article about Skidmore's report, MSU came out with a press release, you know, in support of Skidmore's work. And you almost wonder if someone at MSU said, oh, this is perfect, we can whack them back. I don't know, but there's a much deeper story there. It would take a great deal of time for me to try and figure it out, and I haven't. And then you pointed out some other interesting correlations between Betsy DeVos rolling back Title IX protections 2 days after meeting with the MSU president. And I just can't comment on it. I don't know anything about it. It'll all be in the notes. Dear Catherine, I just listened to your discussion with Adam Trombley from 2011, read the transcript again to try and learn more about the QRS. And then there's some questions about the QRS, and they wanted confirmation of where I bought my QRS. So I had my assistant send you the contact information on where I purchased mine. I've had two now. The first was a gift, and the second one I purchased. I also should mention there's a new similar kind of machine called a pulse harmonic, and I've been trying that one as well lately and don't have anything to report yet. I have a lot more to learn. Dear Catherine, I've been following your blog for years and just this year finally became a subscriber. Someday when I have more time, I will tell you my story of how I was harvested. I want to give you a heads up about a story and event that will be commemorated next Monday, January 29, 2018, near Preston, Idaho. The northwestern band of the Shoshone Nation will be commemorating the massacre of their tribe by American troops in 1863. Darren Perry, the tribal chief, has a very interesting story to tell and is a very articulate and charismatic person. It was his great-grandfather who was the chief at the time of the massacre. It was the largest slaughter of Indians by federal troops in U.S. history. Estimates are of between 300 and 500 men, women, and children, and it is not taught in schools. What I find most interesting is the situation of the tribe today. They are the only tribe in the United States not to have a reservation. They don't have any problems of domestic violence or drugs or alcohol abuse that other tribes have. Out of a tribe of around 550 members, they have 23 members going to college. The other seven tribes of Utah combined have about seven tribal members in college. Darren was recently thrown onto the national stage when a town in northern Utah Wellsville celebrated its beginnings and misrepresented Darren's tribe. The Ute tribe initially started a scandal, but Darren stepped in and met with the local town leaders and worked through the matter with them. Darren loves to tell his tribe's story and has a powerful message of peace and tolerance. After listening to your story about your decision to move forward with your defense against the government's false accusations against you, only if you could not lose your love of mankind in the process, Darren's story struck me as very similar. Below is a link to the contact page of the tribe. I'm sharing this with you in the hope that you will find inspiration in Darren and his tribe as they move forward in the 21st century, and perhaps it could be a message we're sharing on the Salir Report. Thank you for the lovely silver coin. I keep it in my purse as a reminder to be nice to everyone. That's the Salir silver coin. I really appreciate that, and I took a look at the website, but I need to learn more, so I will definitely keep that on my possibilities for our guest list. Dear Catherine, I met you in Larkspur at the time you asked me to drop you a line once in a while. And then she sends a story about the Hawaii missile incident. There's clearly a story there. I don't know what it is. It looks to me like the nuclear arsenal marketing program. Hello, Catherine. Last month, I joined the cruise and became a subscriber. Since then, I've spent innumerable hours listening to and reading items from your website. This isn't a complaint, but the volume of information is almost overwhelming. Yes, it is. I'm running as fast as I can. I'll catch up soon. As you mentioned in the most recent equity wrap-up, international and foreign stock markets offer better values than the stretched U.S. markets. A few years ago, I succumbed to fear porn and exited almost all my stock market positions, with the exception of some mining shares, which finally perked up. Now, that's the advantage of hedged equity, because you can stay in and protect yourself from a big down. I reviewed the charts of the foreign ETFs and would like to know if a small basket of these would make sense at current prices. I'm hesitant to re-enter the U.S. markets until there's a decent correction, something I've been waiting for, but quite some time. While the Rambus charts were informative, I don't have the time or stomach for individual stocks and would prefer ETFs or carefully selected fund. I am not an ETF fan. I think the funds, the ETF have the advantage of lower transaction fees, but I don't think the legal, I think we get in a tough liquidity event. The ETFs are not where I want to be. Have you considered offering sample portfolios detailing percentages within the foreign markets? That would be a tremendous help. As an investment advisor, I can only do that if I'm registered in all 50 states that the subscribers are in, or if I'm SEC registered. And in fact, I'm going the opposite direction. I'm working on screens. We've launched them, but I'll announce them sometime during February. I'm doing two screens, Salir World and Salir Space, Salir World and Salir Space, working with an asset manager, and I can do that without being registered in all 50 states. He has to be registered where he offers to more than five clients, or the company does. So I would love to. If it wasn't for the regulation, I would love to do that, but I really can't. I'm currently living in San Francisco and have found your comments regarding the recent fires to mirror my own. I'll never forget waking up at 1 a.m. that Monday morning. The smoke was so pungent, I was sure our house was on fire. Once I determined that was not the case, I went into the front and backyard and finally out in our street looking for the fire. Nothing, just dense smoke. It wasn't until I went online and I learned of the fire's location. This wasn't a natural occurrence. Since then, the possibility of further such situations happening in our area lingers. We have limited space and many who want in. That is a very intelligent comment. We have limited space and many who want in. I'm going to say it again. It's a very insightful comment. We have limited space and many who want in. Thank you for your time. You're an invaluable source of information. I'm afraid there is going to be more of what I call the Phoenix Program. If you're not familiar with what's going on, you know, what the Phoenix Program is, it was an eradication sort of population reengineering program and re-education program in Vietnam under the Americans. And I would take a look at it, because if you understand the Phoenix Program in Vietnam, you'll be able to recognize what's happening here. I think it's highly unlikely that there would be the kind of thermal warfare we saw in Santa Rosa and San Francisco. I just don't think that's happening. If you look at the economic gentrification, sort of ethnic cleansing of the African Americans out of San Francisco. It's been going on, but it's much more invisible. Some of the examples we're seeing around the country, I put a video up from Reason TV called Battle for the California Desert. Why is the government driving folks off their land? Take a look at that one. That's an example of sort of one aspect of the Phoenix program. Another, someone sent me an email, Friday shooting at the Queensbridge houses, New York's CHA housing project plagued with various problems, but a sniper on the roof just arbitrarily shooting people. That is a Phoenix program operation. Let's see. As I recently start to contemplate the theories of an approaching ice age by diminishing energy output of the sun, and they go more on the theories of ice age. And of course, one theory of climate change is that we're coming into a new ice age. Another theory is that we're coming into progressively more warming. They continue with some other information examples and then say, I searched Solaria and didn't find anything really on this topic. Is this something to consider or just another rabbit hole? Does this fit in with the geoengineering? Would an interview with Ben Davidson or someone in the field be considerable? Thanks. Do a search and read my review called This Does Not Change Everything. It's a review of Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything, and it describes the kind of integrated analysis I want to see on the climate change issue. I've never found it. I want to see something that integrates global spraying, weather warfare, electromagnetic fields, the possible deterioration in the electromagnetic field or an earth magnetic field and magnetic core, HARP, UFOs. I want actionable intelligence, so I need all of these things integrated into some kind of rational explanation of what the possibilities are of what's going on, what could explain it, and what does it mean to the weather. And so take a look at that. This does not change everything. I'm not interested in getting different people in the Solaria Report, the one who says it's an ice age and one who says it's, going to be warmer, or, you know, there are lots of different points of view. What I need is an integrated analysis. All I see now is lots of different points of view, none of which are integrated. Hi, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber, but have known of your work for years. Solaria is amazing and such a great investment. Thank you so much for all your work. My question is that a lot of the companies that have been benefited from the missing money are most likely defense companies. They're also the companies that are most likely to increase in value due to the space economy play. If the you-know-what hits the fan with the missing money, will these companies be likely to be badly hit, thus negating the upside on the space play? Potentially, the whole corporate economy could be hit. At the same time, I think it's unlikely in this sense. There is an inelastic demand globally from a strategic leadership position to go to space. One of the reasons I'm pretty confident in the long-term trend in space is I think if you put me in Mr. Global's shoes, I would do the same thing. I think there is a commitment to build out our presence in space and not to bet the ranch on this planet. So certainly not the future of the human race. So I think this is a primary trend that's going to have absolute preference from the global political process, not just in the United States. If you look at the size of the Asian space programs, it's much more significant than ours. This is a global phenomena. So, yes, the federal government having to be able to having to comply with the law could absolutely reduce money flowing to corporations across the board. You name it, it's gonna cut the flow of money to the entire corporate infrastructure. So, but the reality is, I think we have a very long term, inelastic demand commitment to space. So, it's one area I'm pretty confident in. I was interested to hear your skeptical on the repeal of net neutrality, and we go in. Here's the problem. You've got two sides on net neutrality. The FTC on one side, Google and Facebook, I don't trust either of them. So that's the problem. We have a battle of who's going to be the regulator, and neither of the regulators, in my opinion, are trustworthy. And And that, so it's hard to choose which one is better. Hi, Catherine. Do you know William Pepper from the transcript? One of the other things I wanted to say, we see, I think it was Montana passed a law demanding and requiring net neutrality within Montana. Now, that's what I trust, communities starting their own systems and taking steps at the state and local level to keep NSA and everybody else out, and to make sure that the big monopolies, and these are monopolies, if the law was applied, they wouldn't be allowed to exist. But I think it's time for state and local government to get deeply involved in making sure these monopolies can't rape consumers anymore and practice surveillance capitalism. And I don't care whether it's NSA doing it or Google and Facebook doing it. To me, it's the same thing. Hi, Catherine. Do you know William Pepper? And then there's a long description of William Pepper and his work. He was the attorney who represented the King family. And it's really told the story of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Pepper's excellent. I regularly post his work, and I thank you for sending those links. I have great confidence in him. I think he was a great truth teller. Catherine, thanks for both wrap-ups, part one and two. Truly the best on the web. You mentioned you were doing a video on mind control. No, it's not me. It's the Aaron and Melissa Dykes at TruthStream TV. So, and then she made some suggestions on some great books. I've ordered the books. In fact, they've come in. So my pile of 300 books in the den is growing every day. Hi, Catherine. Have you heard of Professor Yuval Noah Harari? No, he is the author of Homo's Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. He contends that a new species of humans will emerge in the next several decades, and this species will merge with artificial intelligence and robotic technology, similar to the singularity proposed by Ray Kurzweil. He also states that religion will be replaced by Dadaism, which is basically the worship of algorithms. Professor Harari might be a fascinating guest to interview for Solari. I have not heard of the professor, so I will. I look forward to checking him out, and thank you for the recommendation. Well, that's it for this evening. Next week, February 8th, the emerging multipolar world with the Saker, we have a lot to talk about. If you look at all the pressures of the war lobby and the neocons, there's a lot to be concerned about, and I'm hoping that the Saker will really help us pick it. Through then February 15th, the following week, a new series in the Solari Report, Future Science, produced by Ulrich Groniger, a remarkable intellect and reporter, very interested in the developments in science, which are astonishing. She'll be talking about muons and neutrinos, excitement and excitation. So I've seen it. We're going to be producing that, or Ulrich's going to be producing that in video form. It's astonishing, and I'm very excited about it. I'd like to see a lot more science on the Solari Report, because it's what's going on in science is really rocking our world. So until next week, ladies and gentlemen, please don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.